If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
And I'm Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are into Sansa 6 of A Storm of Swords. I gotta tell you, I'm gonna miss saying of A Storm of Swords whenever we're through this book, because I feel like we're making some progress here. Like, we haven't had shows popping up, we haven't had a ton of news, so we've just been doing chapter after chapter after chapter, which I think is great. Obviously, it's gonna get interrupted.
We may just have to grind it out because we only have like 10 chapters left.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I mean, it's 69. Where are we at? This is chapter Sansa. I think we only have two Sansa chapters left, because then they turn into Elaine, which we'll get into today, right?
Yeah, interesting. 10 chapters. We'll be close to done by the time Dunk and Egg drops, I guess.
So if it's not, then maybe we'll, or depending on how many, you know, we have left, because we obviously we're probably take next week off, Thanksgiving and Christmas. Depending on how much we get through, man, I mean, we're kind of grinding, getting close here. And then we got to put together our
boiled leather
our
read.
Map. Yeah. So where are we at here? So 68 is Sansa 6. Okay, so then you have 80 and 81. So 12, 13, you know? I mean, the epilogue, and then...
So we'll be done by March.
At our pace, yeah.
Well, yeah, but the show's coming, too. So we're going to be covering the show weekly.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll have a couple different episodes talking about what we expect for season 2 and recapping and stuff. So I think March is pretty realistic, which I kind of like, because March brings in spring, things are coming back to life, and then we'll have a new project coming to life, which will be Boiled Leather, which will be, I think it's going to be a blast. I can't wait.
Yeah. And then towards the end of the year, then, you know, you have House of the Dragon. Next year is big. I have some more news on the Game of Thrones video games. See if there's any more of those coming. The Game Awards is coming, by the way. We might actually see some footage.
That would be cool.
That's a big thing. But Jimmy, real quick, we were talking about it. We almost had to hit record. I was like, dude, we might have to record on this, because I popped in to your live stream over on your channel, Chatting with Nuts, and you had mentioned, I don't know what exactly you guys were talking about. Was it Dream?
The Fever Dream. Yeah,
that was what the episode was specifically about. Oh, yeah. So anyway, so I was like, man, I should read this. I've never really read George's other works. I've done The Ice Dragon. My God, I blitzed through that book. It's freaking phenomenal.
Yes, Fever Dream, for those who don't know, is a vampire novel, but it's really about steamboats and two men's friendship. And it is my favorite vampire novel, and I'll go further. It's my favorite vampire story, because I've probably seen 30 or 40 vampire movies. Like, I'm a big horror guy. It's my favorite vampire story. It is such a great book. It's short, but it lands a punch. I mean, as George always does. But I was so glad that you liked it.
Oh yeah, dude, it was phenomenal. I bought the graphic novel, which is like in like 10 parts, so like 10 separate comic issues, just like see some visual along with it. I will say the graphic novel is not particularly great if you're only doing the graphic novel. It definitely feels much more like a companion to, like a visual companion to the book. But I believe the audiobook was around 18 hours without speeding it up. So,
and I mean, that's not so bad.
Yeah. So then I was like, after I got about 10 hours in, I was like, okay, let me try, like, because some audiobooks depends on the narrator's pace.
Yeah.
So I found about like 1.25 to be perfect. And then, you know,
I like, feel like it's a little more
Roy DeTrice, I'm on about at like 1.5 because he has some serious pauses in there.
Roy, even as the series goes on, he gets slower somehow. I think the Dance with Dragons audiobook is like 52 hours or something.
A lot. It's insane. It's so massive. Yeah. That's why I feel, and that's why it's one of those things where I feel like sometimes I'm always like, man, this is a short chapter because it's because like I listen to the audiobook, but then I look at the actual pages and I'm like, well, it's only like 6 pages. Like, you know, I mean, you know, like on Kindle, and I'm just like, huh? Maybe that's why it feels short. You know?
That's Roy, man. Roy the boy. Rest in peace.
Yeah, but good God, Fever Dream. If you've never read it, man, obviously you're here if you like George Martin's work. So I would highly, highly suggest it. We're gonna have to do a episode about it, and then talk about, you know, like, because I have seen people mention it in theories, be like, well, if you look at some of his other, like the way he's end stories, and I've seen people make analogies to be like, oh, I feel like this character's arc kind of fits, you know, this character's arc. Like, mm-hmm. I've even heard it suggested as like, you know, Daenerys's dream of coming to Westeros. Is that really like a fever dream, right? Which is a big theme of that story, like one man's dream, right? Yeah. Abner Marsh's dream is this, you know, to build this boat, right? You know, like 1850s.
Down there steamboat, in Louisiana.
Steamboat and get into steamboat racing, you know, become the best steamboat on down there on the Mississippi.
It's so good. It sounds so silly to be like, yeah, the steamboat stuff's sick, but it actually is. And then George takes an entire chapter to let you know how these vampires work, and it's also sick. And then there's a lot of really good stuff in there for the time that this story takes place, because obviously being the time it is, there's a ton of racism. And I think George actually weaves it into the story really well. And obviously kind of deconstructs the idea of racism, I would say. But just overall, a really great piece of fiction.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's freaking phenomenal if you haven't read it. And Jimmy and I might do maybe we'll bring some people on.
I would love that. I mean, I've been screaming about Fever Dream since I read it. And I've read a lot of George's other stuff, and I've yet to run into something that is like a complete stinker. Like, it's just never happened. I mean, some of his short stories are somewhat forgettable, but there's also a lot of them that I would consider some of my favorite short fiction. And they're not all fantasy. They're not all horror. Some of it is almost borderline thriller-esque. And then, of course, he's, before Game of Thrones, was very much considered like a king of short sci-fi. I mean, that was his bag. And then he has the novel Night Flyers, which is a space sci-fi revolving around an AI. I think it's really good. It's been adapted, I think, once or twice already. Fever Dream's got to get a movie or limited series, though. I mean, HBO, you already have a deal with the man. Like, just...
we talked about this, and I said that if the Hollywood vampire push would have come out after Game of Thrones, there's no doubt in my mind that Fever Dream 1000% would have been adapted, because then it would have been like, oh, well, look, George R. R. Martin, the guy from the author of Game of Thrones, comes this new vampire, you know, to go along with Twilight and True Blood and all that stuff.
They would have had to mess with a little bit.
We're just a few years off of happening with each other.
Well, if you take Joshua York and Abner Marsh, who I think the platonic relationship between them as friends is actually one of my favorites I've ever read, but it's really probably more likely they would have taken that and made it male female and made it a romance, I would imagine, like to fit the Twilight. You know what I'm saying? But I mean, I don't want to go too far into it, but the way that Abner Marsh is written and Joshua York are written,
so
and they form this relationship being completely different people from completely different backgrounds, and they actually end up influencing each other. Like Abner Marsh starts to learn more, right? Mm-hmm. He starts to Dude, it's like real character growth. It's so good.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
And it definitely needs like a prequel, I would say.
Oh, give me more Fever Dream novels. I'm in.
He's got to finish Winds of Winter before he does anything. So the likelihood of us seeing that is probably never.
No, I think he's done with that. I think he's like, we're fine. We got it. But yeah, dude, I think, you know, obviously I love A Song of Ice and Fire. It's my favorite thing ever. But
I have it right up there with it, though.
that's what I was gonna say. I mean, there's stuff that he's written that I think is on par with it, which I think Fever Dream, Sand Kings, and Windhaven are all on par. I mean, Windhaven is a phenomenal piece of science fiction and fantasy. Like, it is so good. It's actually three novellas stitched together by him and Lisa Tuttle, who he speaks super highly of every time he gets a chance to. And it is probably my favorite main character that's a female ever. Like, I love that novel. It's so good. And there were supposed to be more, actually.
Oh, maybe I have to do this before I do Dream Songs.
You could. Because Windhaven has a lot of parallels to A Song of Ice and Fire thematically. Mm-hmm. And there's a specific theme in that story that once you read it, we can talk about that I actually personally identify with a lot. So it actually, the story meant a lot to me when I read it as well. Did I tell you about Gurm's like big project that he never finished? Did we talk about this last time? Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. So I didn't know this. And I want to make sure. Yeah, here we go. Magnum Opus. So before Game of Thrones took off, I didn't know this. Gurm was working on what he considered to be his most ambitious project of all time and his magnum opus, and it was called Avalon. And it was going to take place in his 10,000 world series. Did I bring this up last time?
Mm-hmm. Maybe not last time, but yes.
Okay. Well, I still am. So I wish I could ask him questions about that today. I just want to know more.
So what about, have you read Dying of the Light?
Yeah. Dying of the Light is his debut novel. And I actually really like it. It's probably, I would say it's his probably least well-received book. Like, I've seen a lot of people be like, it's okay. Well,
the audio book, which was released 10/16/12. So right around the time of Game of Thrones or whatever, is narrated by Ian Glenn.
Oh, really?
And Ian Glenn actually did a ton of narrate. He's done a ton of narration for George because he did the it's part of that, what, like the Book of Swords or whatever, which contained the novella of like the Rogue Prince and, you know, all. There is versions of those that Ian Glenn narrated. Obviously, those then got pushed into Fire and Blood, excuse me. And it's a different narrator, but there are versions, standalone novella versions, that are Ian Glenn. And so I believe Ian Glenn also did the one for the Book of Swords, which is Maegor and Aenys.
That is,
I might be wrong about that one, but I definitely know he did the Rogue Prince and the Princess and the Queen.
I did not know that. I will tell you, I like Dying of the Light. And if he did the audiobook, it's probably worth a try. There is some really wild stuff in that story. I think it's obvious it's his first novel, though.
That's fine.
Yeah, I still love it. I mean, I really enjoyed it. There's a city in there that has wind that causes nihilism. Like, what? It's crazy. Like, the wind blows and you're like, maybe life isn't worth living. That's so crazy.
I'm just gonna getting all of it.
Yeah, man, I think going through his works is always really fun. And then once you finish those, then you start reading his favorite authors. That's what my project has been really for like the last 6 years on my YouTube channel.
Oh, Night Flyers.
Night Flyers is good.
Night Flyers is only 4 hours.
Oh, it's so short. Yeah, it's technically a novella.
That's fine.
Dude, Night Flyers is good. I think you could find Night Flyers on YouTube audiobook. Pretty sure.
I kind of like to own them.
I want to support George any way I can.
Yeah.
I'm a simp.
Me too. That's fine. That's what we do. He's never going to release the books. He will.
That's right. And if he does,
or his estate will release it.
Oh yeah, Winds gets released in some fashion.
Everything will come out. Okay, all the details.
Yeah, the estate is not. They're not going to not make that money. They're going to get it.
Yeah.
Hey, whatever.
It will. Hey, it'll happen. All right, let's dive in. Any other news? Any other thing?
No, there's really no news. I was kind of wondering if there'd be any more blowback about the AI in the book. I know a lot of people were mad, but it doesn't seem like there's very much on George's side. The last thing on his blog is still his art director trying to save their job, which is pretty funny. But no real news except for Duncan Egg. I'm getting emails about it now from HBO Max, so. They're ramping it up.
They're not asking us to do anything, are they?
No, of course not. No, I wish. I wish.
They hate us. Well, the one time we had an opportunity, the game sucks.
Yeah, and I mean, that's throwing us scraps. Like, come on.
I mean, come on.
We were in Bloomberg.
I know. Jeez.
I love saying we were in Bloomberg as if I was on the show, man.
I think you'd done some episodes.
Oh, probably at that point. Yeah.
Did you do episodes before season 8 or after season 8?
It was at the tail end, I think. I think it was still on the air. You know, ironically, you know what I remember more than that is like Here's with the Horn.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah. When I would jump on the Wheel of Time podcast. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Remember the Matt and Ez show?
Did some episodes of that.
It had a great logo.
It did. It still does. I refreshed. I actually went back and refreshed some logos.
Did you?
Yep. They were just old. But I'm never refreshing this logo ever.
No, it's too good.
I did once. I was like, okay, because when we originally said it, I was like, never touching the logo. But then I was like, I can make this like more HD, but I'm not gonna do like something different. Just
Disney. No, I like what we got.
Yeah, it's fine.
It looks good.
All right, let's dive in to today's chapter, which is Sansa 6 of A Storm of Swords. So Sansa is alarmed to discover that Littlefinger has no intention of bringing her home. Instead, she is being taken to the Vale of Arryn. They land at the tiny tower of House Baelish that Peter is lord of, and he stresses that Sansa must start using a new name, calling her Elaine Stone, so that no one will really know who she is. She learns that Oswald is actually the Kettleblack's father, and a Littlefinger leads her to discern that it was the Queen of Thorns who poisoned Joffrey when she took one of the amethysts from Sansa's hairnet. All of the plans were arranged by Littlefinger, who met Lady Olenna when she brokered the alliance that joined Highgarden to House Lannister. Soon after, Lysa Arryn arrives with a small group, and she insists that Peter wed her now at this tower instead of the Eyrie. Lysa wants to make another child with Peter after her father aborted the first child years ago. A drunken Malarian tries to seduce Sansa that night, but Lord Lothar Brune forces him away. The next morning, Peter tells Elaine that Lysa must know the girl's identity. Lysa does not like having Sansa around, although she does wish to marry her niece to her son, Robert. It's always weird because we obviously call him Peter Baelish, but when I listen to the audiobook and it's Roy Dotrice, he calls him Petyr. And so sometimes it's like what pops back into my head. And I'm always like, so that I'm reading and I'm always like, Petyr, Peter, yeah, you know, just throw me off.
This chapter introduces some people that we'll see again, which is pretty neat, which I'm obviously thinking of Lothar Brune. Mm-hmm. Am I saying that right?
Yes.
Lothar. Yes, okay. I think Lothar's a pretty interesting character because it almost feels like he's looking out for Sansa in many regards, but I also just can't seem to trust anyone in the Vale because I don't think anyone is who they say they are.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about Peter Baelish naming Sansa after his mother?
Yeah, it's a little weird.
It's gross. Yeah, it's really gross, dude. He's such a skeez. It's awful.
He's so weird. Yeah, there's a lot of, man, you know, just because we're dealing it with in our real life too. There's a lot of pedophilia in this chapter.
Yeah, it becomes
almost, it feels obvious. Almost more than like Jorah Mormont.
I think it's a slow realization from Sansa's POV that everyone has like bad intentions around her. Like they all want something from her, whether it's her name or her, and you almost feel like she's like in a nest of vipers.
Mm-hmm.
And she's not even Sansa anymore. It's kind of a hopeless situation. It feels pretty bad.
Yeah. And she takes on a different, Arya changed her name to Ari, but Arya is really going to go on to become no one. But Sansa, we forget that too. Like she's now Elaine Stone. Like, well, that's, I think that's one that we kind of often like forget about when we're talking about theories and everything, and that she is totally pretending to be a different person. And this is like, huge difference. This is one of the most monumental, big, mega differences between the shows and the books is Sansa's arc, because she does not go marry the Boltons. That changes like everything. I mean, it's such
none of this stuff is even valid, really. Yeah, that we're going through right now.
He does take her, but then you know they go to the Vale, and you know you begin to go down the arc. You get that epic scene from her. Sophie Turner crushes that. Where, that's so sweet. Where she tells him essentially like the Game of Thrones, like, "Yeah, I'm playing it now."
Yeah, and shout out to her. I mean, she did a pretty excellent job, and I imagine that was not an easy role to play. seeing as what they did with the character, which kind of sucked. But yeah, there's no Lothar Brune in the show. No one cares about him. But in the books, we care, because he'll eventually become captain of House Arryn guards.
Yeah,
eventually. I think at the end of this book, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
Major person who I mean what's your vibes about him? Like, what would you say about him,
about Lothar Brune? Yeah,
do you think he's a good guy?
I don't know, he's one of those guys. I'll say this, to be honest, the Vale arc and the Vale storyline, to me, like, as you go forward, is probably the storyline that I feel it's kind of the weak, not necessarily, I wouldn't say it's the weakest, but it's just the one that I'm probably the least interested in.
I think that's kind of fair, because there is a sense of like, where is this going? And I don't think that's
no indication from the show to give us any.
Yeah. And it's obviously setting a lot of stuff up to be resolved in Winds of Winter. Right. Like,
sure.
He's and there's stuff happening, but you're also wondering who's who. I'll read his bio real quick, just because I think it's kind of interesting. He's of low birth and is a distant poor cousin to House Brune. After his father's death, Lothar went to Brune's of Brown Hollow in an attempt to form a family bond, but they said he was no kin of theirs. He also states that he learned what he knows of arms the hard way, and his nickname is the Apple Eater, which is kind of wild. It says that cutting his way through the House of Fossaway men-at-arms to capture Sir John Fossaway and kill Sir Brian and Sir Edwin Fossaway during Blackwater, Battle of Blackwater for Joffrey, it earned him the name Lothar Apple Eater, as the Fossaway sigil is an apple.
Yeah.
Kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess for me, like, just to continue on my thought there, because I was thinking about it while you're talking, is ultimately, we've talked about this many times, is that Sansa's arc can go in so many different directions.
Yeah,
but it's just there's no real clear indication as to where it's going, other than she's there. You know what I mean? Like, she's there. She might go take an army into the Battle of the Bastards. She might marry young Griff. She might, or get, you know.
Here's a cool thing. When we do Boiled Leather, I think, remember, George wrote a lot of those books at the same time and they were split, then he added the dance, whatever, but I think maybe going back and forth in a more chronological way, we might start seeing a couple hints.
I think possibly. So too.
Yeah,
you know, I will say, when we do that, the one thing we are going to miss out on is the things you pick up on as you read the book.
Yeah,
straightforward. But hey, that's what we've always wanted to do it, and that's what we're doing. So it's how you study these books. There's a million different ways to read them.
Yeah, and of all the times I've reread, I've never done it that way. So, and you know, hey, who knows, maybe a Sansa chapter will happen, and then we'll get a Tyrion chapter with young Griff, and we're like, oh, interesting.
Yeah, and I have that mega spreadsheet. I saved it to the drive that somebody did, where they did the entire series. It said chronologically, this is actually how it goes, because there are some, like, towards the end of the beginning that probably happen. Okay, so let's dive into some of the key points of this chapter. So, like we said in the reread, man, there's so much about this, like you had mentioned, where, like, everyone wants something from Sansa, right? So there's a line here. Maybe like two or three pages in. Everyone wants something, Elaine, and when you know what a man wants, you know who he is and how to move him.
Yeah.
And so he's like, literally, I think it's more like, not, it's like, move him isn't like the piece, right? It's like the piece of the game, because the whole thing starts where he says, are you fond of games? A new name would take some getting used to. Games, I suppose it would depend. Griesel reappeared before he could say more, balancing a large platter. She set it down between them. There were apples and pears and pomegranates, some sad-looking grapes, a huge blood orange. The old woman had brought it around a bread as well, and a crock of butter. Pataire cut a palm... Pataire. Peter gets me every time. It's got me now. Roy DeTrice has got me. Peter cut a pomegranate in two with his dagger, offering half to Sansa. You should try and eat, my lady. Thank you, my lord. You know, and then Gore's going on a little bit about food here, but he loosened the seed with the point of a dagger. You must miss your terrible father. You must miss your father terribly. I know Lord Eddard was a brave man, honest and loyal, but quite a hopeless player. He brought the seed to his mouth with the knife. In King's Landing, there are two sorts of people. the players and to the pieces. And I was a piece. She dreaded the answer. Yes, but don't let that trouble you. You're still half a child. Every man's a piece to start with, and every maid as well, even some who think they are the players. And so he's eating these seeds too, I think, which I do believe, you know, it's not just George like going on about food. I think it is also like important, right? Because in a way, it is still sort of like the pieces of the, like the pie, I guess, if you want to see it, or however you want to view it, where it's like, you know,
planting seeds,
all of these things. And so, you know, then he goes on a little about it, and she's asking about like, oh, you put the poison in. So you get to this line here. Tell me, Elaine, now that he's calling her Elaine, which is more dangerous, the dagger brandished by an enemy or the hidden one pressed to your back by someone you never see, you never even see? The hidden dagger. That's a clever girl, he smiled with his thin lips bright red from the pomegranate seeds. What the imp set off with her guards, the queen had Sir Lancel hire her sellswords for her. Lancel found her the kettle blacks, which delighted your little lord husband, since the lads were in his pay through his man Bronn, he chuckled. But it was me who told Lord Oswell to get his sons to King's Landing when I learned that Bronn was looking for swords. Three hidden daggers, Elaine now perfectly placed. So one of the kettle blacks put the poison in Joffrey's cup, you know, and then he goes on, did I say that? Right? You know, did I say that? So it does raise some questions about some things that I don't believe are really ever stated about, like, you know, we know that Oswald, you know, Kettle Black is like banging Cersei. Like, does Baelish know that? Is that ever going to come up? Is he ever going to be able to use that against her? Like, even if he runs
say Jamie, maybe,
right? It's, I think it's more likely that he could run into Jamie, just given his proximity and Jamie's proximity, like, and he could use that against him. Because there, I did actually see a line, because it was just like on TikTok where I saw a scene of Game of Thrones, and it must be like season 8 and or late season 7, and it's basically after Cersei has told Jaime off and Jaime comes to join the fight, and Daenerys is talking to him, and she's like trying to say, like, you know, your sister promised an army and she sent one man, and, you know, I was told stories by my brother about how, like, the Kingslayer killed my father and all of this stuff. And I thought, you know, that could actually be something that maybe could happen, but maybe it's Sansa who runs into Jaime, right? Because, like, we know, yeah, Brienne is seeking her out. So it's possible that, like, Brienne and Jaime's story will go together more. Maybe Jaime will go back. We don't know, but Jaime and Brienne may have more to do.
Yeah, definitely. And I will say, like, the meeting of a Daenerys and Jaime, that is something I would like to see in the books. I think that could be explosive.
Yeah.
I think Baelish probably did know what Cersei was up to, because Cersei's not as clever as she thinks. So I imagine a lot of people probably actually know.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it's just, again, you go back to the whole big wild card of Sansa and everything. But somebody's going to run into Lady Stoneheart. Like, would Baelish run into her? Like, that would just be, that could be, to see what she's become and everything. Like, that,
I think, could be a massive... she kills him. I think Lady Stoneheart kills him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause he betrayed Ned. And I think it all comes back down to that. He's mortified what he sees of her. She ends up, I think she is the perfect person to end his arc.
Yeah, because we talked about this last time, where it's like, I think maybe last time we did a Sansa chapter, maybe that stuff with Arya and Baelish and stuff happened in the Vale.
Support for this podcast is brought to you by Walden University. Ever catch yourself thinking, what if I could go after what I actually want and really make a difference? You're not alone, and that's exactly why I want to tell you about Walden University. For over 50 years, Walden has helped working adults like you get the W, with the knowledge and skills to build the future you want and make a difference where it matters most. If you've been waiting for the right moment, this is it. Head to waldenu.edu and take that first step. Walden University. Set a course for change. Certified to operate by Chev.
There's multiple ways, but I don't know how far he's going to go in the book series, but his death needs to be far more impactful than the show. And even here in the books, like, where he's talking to her about playing the game and everything, this is much better done in the books. even for like season four, season five time, this chapter is a much better than what happens in the show.
I forgot to tell you this, but my wife has finished A Storm of Swords for the very first time, and she's only watched up to season four of the show, and she closed the book and she said, "I am legitimately stunned." I said, "What?" And she said, this lady, Stoneheart lady, was not in the show. I was like, yeah. She's like, "This is the coolest thing that's happened in all the books." And I was like, "Well, that's kind of a ridiculous statement, but that's a little much, but yeah, it's a huge deal." And by the way, she loved it. She loved it. So that was cool.
Well, I mean, I think it's difficult not to, but
yeah, the Lady Stoneheart chapter is fantastic. Like, the ending of this book is fantastic.
Oh, it's,
and the fact that they didn't adapt it is puzzling.
Yeah. Just like
one of the best parts.
I remember I did a TikTok about it because I read some articles about it, and there's no like mega explanation for it. But one of the things they sort of had said was that, like, does it ruin John's resurrection?
Well, yeah.
And I think so, because George is doing it.
And it definitely doesn't. And also, his resurrection is going to be different anyways. I remember them saying something along the lines of they were trying to get basketball players and soccer moms to watch the show, and they wouldn't like Lady Stoneheart. I remember reading that and being like, "Oh,
wait," because it, if anything, it makes John's, and this is the big difference from the show, the books, it makes John's resurrection that much cooler and more interesting. Because now we've seen multiple ways to do resurrection. We saw Khal Drogo. I mean, he was more kind of saved than resurrected. Yeah. But you know what I mean? We saw like blood magic potentially keep him alive. We've seen Lady Stoneheart. That's not particularly
Beric Dondarrion.
Beric Dondarrion losing himself. In the show, he's just kind of the same guy, right? So it's like,
They did him dirty.
But then you see Lady Stoneheart, and it's like, dang, I don't know. You know, maybe John is going to be cold and different.
Yeah, and also even that anticipation. So we all know John's gonna come back, but we've been waiting for like the last 10 years now, wondering what John will be like when he's resurrected. That alone just shows you how invested we are in the process of resurrection in the series, no matter who it is.
Yeah.
So I don't think it would have at all. And this, we'll see. I mean, you know, Lady Stoneheart isn't not going to ruin John's resurrection in the book at all.
Yeah. Let's dive a little bit more into some of the Baelish telling her all of the moves he's made, which are, you know, pretty interesting. So continue on here. So he goes and he says, "I also planted the notion of Sir Loras taking the white. Not that I suggested that that would have been too crude, but men in my party supplied grisly tales about how the mob had killed Sir Preston Greenfield and raped Lady Lawless and slipped a few silvers to Lord Tyrell's army of singers to sing of Ryan Redwine, Serwyn of the Mearshield, and Prince Aemon the Dragonite. A harp can be as dangerous as a sword in the right hands. Mace Tyrell actually thought it was his own idea to make Sir Loras' inclusion into the King's Guard part of the marriage contract. Who better to protect his daughter than her splendid knightly brother? And it relieved him of the difficult task of trying to find lands and a bride for a third son. Never easy, undoubtedly difficult in Sir Loras's case. But that be that as it may, Lady Olenna was not about to let Joff harm her precious darling granddaughter. But unlike her son, she also realized that under all his flowers and finery, Sir Loras is as hot-tempered as Jaime Lannister. Toss Joffrey, Margaery, and Loras in a pot, and you've got the makings for a Kingslayer stew.
Kingslayer stew is a great line.
It is a great line.
And he's right, by the way. Loras, with the last chapter, remember we talk about the order of the chapters, guys. Jaime looks at Loras in his hard-headedness and said, he's just like me, or just like I was.
Mm-hmm.
Reinforced here.
Yeah, reinforced. So then he goes on a little bit further and says, you know, there's another wedding coming. Margaery and Tommen. Sansa did not know what to say. She had liked Margaery Tyrell and her small, sharp grandmother as well. She thought wistfully of Highgarden and its courtyards and musicians and the pleasure barges on the Mander. A far cry from this bleak shore. At least I'm safe here. Joffrey's dead and he cannot hurt me anymore. But I am now only a bastard. And I am only a bastard girl now. Elaine Stone has no husband and no claim, and her aunt would soon be here as well. The long nightmare of King's Landing was behind her, and her mockery of a marriage as well. She could make herself a new home here, just as Peter said.
today, Junior.
Gee, Christmas.
Oh my gosh, that's too good. You know what? You know, I guess I just realized
I have a little dyslexia too, apparently, because I was trying to read like three lines ahead. You know that if we let Jimmy do the reading, it'd be worse.
Oh, it would be. We wouldn't get through it. We wouldn't get through it. I've gotten better. Ironically, it's probably since, you know, reading out comments and stuff on YouTube and live streams. But I dread reading in public. I hate it. I just, I never knew I really had dyslexia until it was like later in school. Like when I was a kid, I don't know. I'm telling everybody this, but I was a late reader. I couldn't read until almost the like third or fourth grade. And they were like really concerned. And then once I learned how to read, like a fire went off and I just started reading everything.
Yeah.
Because I watched everybody else, you know, oh, Where the Red Fern Grows by Boxcar Children. I'm like, I can't read this. I can't read any of this shit because I can't read. And part of it was dyslexia. That's why I was a late reader. So,
yeah, I was like way ahead in reading. My reading level. Oh yeah.
Oh, by fifth grade, I was up to like a freshman in college. And then I was in the gifted program, but then I got kicked out for giving kids the bird when I beat them at chess, tell them to suck it. I was like the bad kid that had two brains, you know.
I was in the freaking behind class for math. Jeez.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that why you're a history major? Is that you were like, you know what?
That's the only reason I even have a college degree. I failed college math like 6 times.
Hey, I failed stats. It's okay.
Literally couldn't do it. The only reason I even have a degree is because you have to get a math credit, which is freaking stupid, by the way.
Yes, it is. Yeah, I agree.
But it was small school. By the time I went to a small school. And anyway, my counselor was like, all right, I'm going to put you in this like teaching early childhood math, because I was originally like going to be a teacher. I was going to teach like social studies, but then like you have to go a few extra semesters to do your student teaching, and my financial aid was running out. And so I was like, all right, well, I guess I'll just get a history degree because you're so close. Just goes like straight history. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so I had already gotten my math credit at that point, but it was like a class teaching class to like elementary kids. And so it's like, all right, today we're doing like clock arithmetic. All right, so if the hands dead serious, looking at a college class like clock arithmetic, like, okay, you know.
That is hilarious.
I was like, I think these kids would be better than me.
And now you work at a hospital.
Yeah, and then you bounce around, do all kinds of different stuff.
It is how it works. That really is how it works.
Yeah.
Where are we at?
We're talking about Baelish.
Oh yeah. He sucks.
Yeah. We were talking about your dyslexia because I was stuttering trying to read what's going on with the Sansa. Jeez.
Well, anyway. I was gonna say that. Sansa is almost getting introduced to this being like her new home. And I think my first gut reaction when I first read this was, yeah, right, she's out of there in a few chapters. But no, she really is kind of staying place. And Sansa is interesting when you look at all the other characters. Only really, I would say Cersei would be similar in the fact that she's really at one location. I guess John would count, but he still goes above the wall, right? He goes on his skirmish with the wildlings. He ends up coming back. So there's at least a little bit there. But Sansa,
in terms of characters who move around the least, yes.
Yeah, she sits in King's Landing, and now she's been sitting in the Vale for 10 years. As we wait for the next book.
Yeah, she's in Winterfell, King's Landing, and then the Vale. That's pretty much it.
Of
the characters who move around the least. I mean, even Sam goes all the way to the Citadel.
Sam's actually a
He goes north of the wall and goes to the Sam's Citadel. All the
cool stuff.
Yeah. Anybody else? Benjen.
Who knows what he's doing? He does.
Craster. He just stays at his one little house.
Well, he's busy.
He's also dead.
Thank God.
Yeah. Okay. So let's continue on a little bit here.
Wait. I just had the craziest idea.
Yes.
What if Craster dying voided a truce between humans and the White Walkers, and that's why they're moving even more south now?
Could be.
What if Craster's death is the trigger that sends them?
Like, King's blood.
That's what I'm saying.
I know.
But seriously, think about it. What if they had this deal, right? And Craster's dead. He's not keeping up his side of the deal. And they're like, well, that voids terms. We're coming to kill everybody.
Could be. Well, we did a Patreon, by the way. We didn't mention the last episode that we did a Patreon episode, diving into a Raven about Craster. And actually I have another one, which we'll have to do another Patreon episode on, talking about more about, again, Corpse Queen and Craster and the others and everything.
We are the Craster podcast.
Nobody else talks about him as much as us.
Nobody else.
Which is crazy because it's one of the most, like, crazy characters.
Dude, what if we renamed the show Craster's Keep?
Just Craster's Keep. What's the oysters, cockles, and Craster? You know? What's the oyster, cockles, and clams? Is that other? I've never listened to him, but I just know, you know, you see there. Podcast, yeah,
dude. I think people would get the wrong idea about us if we call it Craster Scheme.
Yeah,
you just called me stepbro the entire time.
Jeez. Well, he doesn't keep any of the boys alive, just his daughters, but they are out there. The brothers, remember, that's what they say.
The brothers,
yeah. All that's right, let's get
back. All right, sorry, good.
That's okay. Let's dive back into Sansa here. So we move on a little bit here, and then he tells her the story of what happens to her mom.
Yeah.
And then she, you know, also telling, well, Liza, you know, and Liza's here too. So I'm going to read quite a bit here, because it's super, there's just a lot happening here. So we shall darken your hair before we bring you back to the Eyrie, I think. Darken my hair, if it please you, Aunt Liza. You must not call me that. No word for your presence here must be allowed to reach King's Landing. I do not mean to have my son endangered. She nibbled at the corner of a honeycomb. Just because that one is just George. Yeah,
he was hungry when he was writing.
Right. I have kept the veil out of this war. Our harvest has been plentiful. The mountains protect us, and the Eyrie is impregnable. Even so, it would not do to draw Lord Tywin's wrath down upon us. Liza set the comb down and licked honey from her fingers. You were wed to Tyrion Lannister, Peter says, that vile dwarf. They made me marry him. I never wanted it. No more than I did, her aunt said. John Arryn was no dwarf, but he was old. You may not think so to see me now, but on the day we wed, I was lovely. I put your mother to shame. But all John desired was my father's swords to aid his darling boys. I should have refused him, but he was such an old man. How long could he live? Half his teeth were gone and his breath smelled like bad cheese. I cannot abide a man with foul breath. Peter's breath is always fresh. He was the first man I ever kissed, you know. My father said he was too low born, but I knew how high he'd rise. John gave me the customs for Gulltown to please me. But when he increased the incomes tenfold, my lord husband saw how clever he was and gave him other appointments, even brought him to King's Landing to be master of coin. That was hard to see him every day and still be wed to that old, cold man. John did his duty in the bedchamber, but he could no more give me pleasure than he could give me children. His seed was old and weak. All my babies died, but Robert, three girls and two boys, all my sweet little babies dead, and that old man just went on and on with his stinking breath. So you see, I have suffered too. Did you know that your mother is dead? Like, it's like she's talking all this stuff about herself. Like, here's my life and how much of my life sucks. Oh, your mom's dead, by the way. And then
John,
like,
Arryn had a stinky wiener. Your mom's dead.
Ridiculous. It's like Liza's character is like, she's just such a, like, a terrible human being.
Dude, I was gonna say, she is actually worse than Cersei, because she has the same situation, right? The one she wants to be with, she can't be with, which is Jaime, and then she was with Robert and she didn't want to be. Like, it's actually kind of crazy that Liza's the worst of the two.
Yeah. Oh yeah, terrible,
dude.
Let me just read. It keeps going here a little bit. Did you know your poor mother is dead? Tyrion told me, said Sansa. He said the phrase murdered her. The twins would drop. Tears welled suddenly in Lady Liza's eyes. So at least she does at least feel something for her, but it's just like, you just dropped that. It's like so crazy. We are a woman alone now, you and I. Are you afraid, child? Be brave. I would never turn away Kat's daughter. We are bound by blood. She beckoned Sansa closer. You may come kiss my cheek, Elaine. Like, you can, it's so weird.
Also, this is like right after she was like, by the way, I knocked the doors off your mom. I'm so hot. She's so not. And then she's like, oh yeah, and she's dead.
So ridiculous. Her aunt was drenched in sweet scent, though under that was a sour, milky smell.
Oh.
Her cheek tasted of paint and powder. As Sansa stepped back, Lady Lysa caught her wrist. "Now tell me," she said sharply, "are you a child? The truth now. I will know it if you lie." "No," she said, startled by the question. "You are a woman flowered, are you not?" Yes, Sansa knew the truth of her flowering. Tyrion didn't. He never. She could feel the blush creeping up her cheeks. I'm still a maid. Was the dwarf incapable? Like, no. It's just like, he had horrors. He told me so. Horrors, Lysa released her wrist. Of course he did. What woman would bed such a creature but for gold? I should have killed the imp when he was in my power, but he tricked me. He is full of low cunning, that one. His sellsword slew my good sword. Vardis Egan was who we were trying to talk. Remember last week?
Rest in peace.
Rip it. Catelyn should not have brought him here. I told her that. She made off with our uncle, too. That was wrong of her. The Blackfish was my knight of the gate, and since he left with the Mountains, clans are growing very bold. So anyway, it just goes on and on and on. But it's just like, it's this whole thing is just so wild. A man will tell you poison is dishonorable, but a woman's honor is different. My mother shaped us to protect our children, and our only dishonor is in failure. You'll know that when you have a child. You know,
the way that you interpret Lysa is so funny to me.
It's just like, so she's just like rambling.
Like, I actually don't even think about the show now. I just think about your interpretation. And it's way better.
Well, you know, I just had a lot of, I've had a lot of these type of women in my life, you know, just like batshit crazy women.
Oh my gosh. I uttered the words John Aaron stinky wiener. That's just,
I mean,
that's what people tune in for right there.
Sour, milky smell.
Oh, disgusting, dude. And I know exactly what that, like, oh,
it's like Homelander over there. Just,
I'm going to throw away all my core power protein shakes. I can't do it.
You know, I will say one thing we don't really. Who was at the, do we know who was at the Vale for all those years?
What do you mean?
Well, John Aaron is the Hand of the King.
Oh.
So he's in, so she's not in the Vale for all those years.
Well, no, she is.
And he's down there?
And he's down there. Yeah. Well, no, no. Game of Thrones doesn't say she ran back to the Vale?
I believe so.
You might be catching me here.
Well, it's one of those things you just never really think about, and then you have, like, have to do the math.
I guess
I think she does. She does live because, I mean, her and Littlefinger plan to kill.
That's right.
John Aaron. Yeah.
That's right. Okay. Yeah. I guess you got something there.
Let me see if it says anything.
Who is there?
Yeah. After her husband dies, Lysa flees King's Landing and returns to the Eyrie. So who is at the Eyrie when Lysa Arryn is living in King's Landing?
This might have come up in Dance of Dragons, and I'm forgetting. Because a lot of the lords and stuff from the Vale end up coming up, and, you know, that's how the people think there's going to be a tourney and all that stuff. But now that I'm thinking about it, I that's there.
Okay, it is mentioned in Game of Thrones, Chapter 34, Catelyn 6, a long time ago.
Oh, wow.
The Vale has been ruled in his absence by Nestor Royce, High Steward of the Vale. It's probably mentioned one time, you know.
I want to see if he has any other mentions, because I could see this coming up in the Elaine chapters.
The last thing that happened to Nestor Royce, he's actually mentioned in a Winds of Winter chapter. He hosts a tourney at the Gates of the Moon. The winner of the tourney will become the first members of a new knightly order, the Brotherhood of Winged Knights. Nestor is happy, so he's just like some guy who's there. Yeah, he doesn't do anything particularly important.
How interesting. And there's a whole, like, family tree of Royces, and people are trying to put it together.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, but yeah, you just think about her down there at King's Landing. Just doesn't feel like it's her vibe.
Yeah, a bit.
Going to all these tourneys with John Aaron.
Yeah, could you imagine Lysa in a room with Cersei Lannister? You couldn't. There's no way.
And I don't think Cersei ever really mentions her. I mean, like, I'm sure here and there, but never, like, you feel like she'd talk a lot more shit about her, considering, like, she's probably, like, she's ugly as, you know? Like, I mean, yeah. I just feel like that's, like, something Cersei would say about her.
Yeah, I think that we get offhand comments. You feel
like Cersei would say, like, "You're ugly, aunt."
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Doesn't Cersei say something along the lines of, like, she's a cow or something? Like, I feel like I remember her calling her a cow.
Maybe.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Lysa is actually surprisingly a character who is not very... She's not really in the books or the show, obviously, that much.
No, and honestly, the actress did such a nice job that I think she became kind of iconic. But also, let's give our little Robin, little sweet Robin, some credit, because that...
He had a major glow up.
He did.
Everyone was posting that. Well, and I think maybe the milk makes you strong because he was on it for so long.
I mean, good for your bones. At least that's what they used to say. I don't know if that's actually true or not, but
he's definitely not getting osteoporosis.
No, he's probably not going to live long enough to get it anyway. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So any other thoughts here? You know, just the last thing we know is, hey, they're going to be, that she's going to marry her to Robin. So she goes on to here's like the last little bit. Robert has weak eyes, but he loves to read. He loves to be read to, Lady Lysa confided. He likes stories about animals the best. Do you know the little songs about chickens who dressed as a fox? I sing to him all the time. He never grows tired of it. And he likes to play hop frog and spin the sword and come to my castle, but you must always let him win. That's the only proper way, don't you think? He is the Lord of the Eyrie, after all, and you must never forget that. You are well born, and the Starks of Winterfell are always proud, but Winterfell has fallen, and you are really just a beggar now. So put that pride aside. Gratitude will better become you in your present circumstances. Yes, and obedience. My son will have a grateful and obedient wife.
I mean, I'm glad that we're really setting Sansa up for success. You know, she's going to marry her cousin, which is weird.
Yeah, I mean, but
it's set in stone. That's obviously.
Cousin marrying in A Song of Ice and Fire is actually not as it's.
Oh, like, that's tame.
Yeah. That's like normal.
Yeah.
Also normal if you live in like Alabama.
Sorry to all of our Alabama fans.
Or really any location in the United States that contains a school that participates in the SEC conference.
Jeez, man, that's a lot of listeners.
I'm just saying. Okay.
I feel like you might be biased on this.
I might be a little biased.
With that Ohio shirt on.
I do have my Ohio shirt on. I just had to listen to it for this past. Oh, Texas A&M. Aren't they? They're playing like Mercer this week or something. Okay. Gee, I mean, Eastern Illinois. It's like, you know.
Did you know your mom's dead?
Yeah, dude, it's so wild. One of the most wild lines in the whole series. She's like going on this like huge rant and then just ends. It's like, by the way, your mom's dead. It's
like, okay. I am going to just say that randomly in episodes forever now. And people who didn't listen to that exact moment will have no idea what I'm talking about.
It's like literally she just does this huge rant about like, I mean, literally she's going, if you go back, it's like she starts talking like Lady Lysa was still abed, but Lord Peter was up and dressed. Your aunt wished to speak with you. He told Sansa. He pulled on a boot, you know, so he just like railed her. And now she's so that makes it even worse.
That is way worse.
That might make the milk.
Oh, my God.
The milk smell even. It might be Baelish she's smelling, or it might just be milk.
Oh God.
He's into the milk.
I hope not. You know? But probably. He kicks her out the moon door. That's a cold
milk
man.
Turns sour.
The milk's gone bad and he boots it out the door.
Show you the milk water. Jeez.
Milk of the poppy.
Is that what they call it nowadays?
That's what the kids are calling it.
Milk of the Liza, more like
Liza's producing milk. That is,
we don't true. We only get so many Liza chapters to make milk jokes. Okay,
yeah, we gotta lay it on thick. Some would say like whole milk.
Yeah. Now, are you a whole milk person or are you 2%?
So I was a whole milk person my whole life until I got married, and my wife's like, you drink that paint? Like, stop it. And then now it's 2%. Actually, I don't really even drink milk. Like, we never have it in the house.
So. That's like my staple food.
Yeah. I do have core power, like protein shakes, which have dairy in them. So,
yeah.
Which, you know, not doesn't go well, but yeah. What are you going to do?
I grew up on the skim milk.
Really?
Or as Bruce Bolton would call it, the skin milk.
I was a whole milk guy. It's yeah. Delicious.
But now I only drink whole.
Very good for you. Good for you, dude.
Why? I mean Teresa likes the 2%. The 1%. It's like, what are we doing here?
That's it's just water. Crazy. Yeah, it's just white water.
Yeah. I like Fairlife.
Okay. Okay.
Have you ever had Fairlife?
Good. Yeah.
It's like more protein.
It's pretty good. Those are the protein shit. Oh no, I said core power.
Core Power is a protein shake, but Fairlife is like just like more protein.
I have
or something.
Yeah, I think I have a Fairlife protein shake in the fridge.
Yeah, they filter out some of the lactulose and also filter in a shit ton of microplastics. So, you know.
Oh, we love that.
Yeah. It's lactose, you know, if you're lactose intolerant, you can have it, but we're all microplastic tolerant. So.
Oh, it's over. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we lost that battle.
We did. But okay, any other final thoughts on this chapter here,
Jimmy? Yeah, I got nothing.
We're just off the rails.
I got nothing, Matt.
That's okay. All right. So where are we at? We want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing A Storm of Swords, chapter 69.
Nice.
John 9.
And if you like our podcast, which I don't know if anyone's still listening at this point. Yeah. Don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at bdkcast@gmail.com or bendtheneepodcast.com.
You know, we will see you next time. And remember that winter is coming. You know, the funny thing is, Jimmy, is that before we were going to hit record, I was going to say, hey, we should say nice after chapter 69, but you did it anyway. So I didn't have to say it.
Dude, that's called chemistry.